You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my final guest today is Ken Coates, author of the book, The Sinking of the Princess Sophia, Taking the North Down With Her. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming. And we also have Claire Imamura from the State Library Archives and Museums. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks, Shelley.
All right. Well, Ken, for starters, let's talk a little bit about your background. Are you a full-time writer?
I'm a university professor, so I'm not quite sure what that makes me. I'm a teacher, a lecturer, that sort of thing. My most important thing to know about me is I'm actually a UConner. So I was raised in the real north, not down here along the southern coast in the rainforest. So I was raised in Whitehorse and spent a lot of time actually in fishing down in Haines and Skagway and stuff like that. So
I don't know think this, Whitehorse this is that well. Far away from Juneau.
No, I don't. I'm just giving you a hard time.
That's great. I understand that you're also the research chair in regional innovation at the Johnson Shoyama Graduate School of Public Policy.
It's a long title, isn't it?
It is, yeah. What does it mean?
Well, regional innovation, it's not related to my history very much, but it's about the degree to which new technologies are going to change the way of life in northern and remote regions. And you'll know that here in Juneau. I mean, bring in the internet, what does that do? You know, online shopping, what does that do? Distance medicine and those sorts of things. And so one of my challenges is how do you keep places like the North real? How do you keep them in touch with their history, their culture, their values at a time when we're sort of over-connected with the world as a whole? So that's really what I do in my full-time job.
And you were also named to the Royal Society of Canada in 2015. How did that feel?
Well, that was really a great thing, actually. Thank you very much for you and my mother are the only ones that remember that one. The Royal Society is Canada's sort of premier academic sort of recognition. And so they go through this long process of sort of being nominated and they get reviewed and all that sort of stuff. So one of the things it does is it tells you you're getting really old. So you know, people who get into that typically have been around for a long time. And I've been writing Yukon history, Northern Canadian history, and things like that for many years. And to be recognized by your peers is really special. So it's kind of a fun thing to see and to see happen.
And after you wrote The Sinking of the Princess Sophia, which we will get to and talk about, you also wrote another book, and this one was called From Treaty Peoples to Treaty Nation. And is it the subtitle, A Roadmap for All Canadians?
Yeah, that's a really interesting book to sort of focus on. Canada has some very substantial issues and opportunities with Indigenous folks. And we've had a huge transformation in the power of Indigenous people. It's very different than here. You know, you have a modern treaty in here in Alaska, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. We have a modern treaty in the Yukon. We have a whole series of court cases over the last number of years, about 200 of them, most of them won by First Nations. So it's changed the way First Nations and non-Aboriginal people relate in Canada. And we're trying in that book, trying to sort of say, stop seeing this as a controversy and a crisis and a confrontation. Look at it as an opportunity and a chance to sort of rewrite the wrongs of history. And as an historian, I think I really like to sort of bring the perspective of how did we get here to all of these contemporary debates. And so we're going through a similar thing in the United States. It's much smaller on scale in the United States than what you actually see in Canada.
I see. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
And then finally, you also received the Award for Excellence in Aboriginal Relations from the Canadian Council of Aboriginal Business. Did that book lead to that award?
That book did. I hope so. I
mean, among other things.
My mother too, yes. This was a real shock, actually, because if you look at that particular award, it's always been won by my prime ministers and people who run big royal commissions and all that sort of stuff. But I've been spending the last 3 or 4 years – 5 years, I guess, working on how we can engage Indigenous peoples in the resource economy more profitably and successfully. This has been a source of conflict over the last 50 years, and it's now turned into the most positive part of the Indigenous place in Canada. We have a big debate in Canada about what we call reconciliation. How do you sort of get over the offenses of the past, all the historical wrongs and all the injustices and colonialism, paternalism, and actually move it on a more positive scale? So I describe the resource sector as the front lines of reconciliation and have been telling everybody this stuff is working. The future is better than the past. We're breaking away from those old traditions. And I guess they liked what I had to say.
That's great. So that you were awarded that in 2017, and congratulations.
Thank you.
But way before that, you wrote a book called The Sinking of the Princess Sophia, Taking the North Down With Her. How did you come to write this book?
Well, You ask great questions.
Thank you.
It's lots of fun. In an odd sort of way, I was a third-year university student, and I was actually working on an essay on the Yukon during World War I. Okay, so like, who cares? You know, I'm a UConn person. I'm down at UBC, University of British Columbia. Who cares, right? So that's why I did it, because I'm a bit of a contrarian in by nature. And I'm working on this big study of what goes on in World War I. So the UConn made the biggest contribution of anywhere in the country on a per capita basis to World War I. Sent more soldiers, raised more money, bought more savings bonds, bought by miles, right? So like, what's going on here? And I'm going through the newspapers reel after reel after reel. I get... I'm kind of tired of this. I'm getting toward the end, and we're here sort of in October of 1918, and the little tiny story on the front page of the White Horse Star says, ship caught on reef. And little tiny story, I'm like, that's interesting. I sort of, then I turned the crank to the next day, and the headline was List of the Dead. And the front page of the White Horse Star had over 350 names of all the people who'd perished on the Princess Sophia. So the reason this stood out for me was I was raised in Whitehorse. I was an archival rat. I spent my time in the library. I was a historical buff. I had never, as a UConner, heard of this before.
Oh.
And that just drove me insane. I thought, how could we not know about this? It's the biggest maritime disaster in the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
About 10% of the white population of the Yukon died in one day.
10%?
10%. There were about 2,000 white Yukoners at the time. 200 white Yukoners were on that ship. It took many of the leading lights of the whole community down with it, taking the North down with her, and eviscerating its economy and society. And I had never heard of it. So the disappearance of the story is, in fact, part of the story. And my rediscovery of this. And so many years later, I was a young puppy at that time. Many years later, a friend of mine, Bill Morrison, and I were sort of sitting there thinking, what will we write about next? And we thought, well, this is a cute small story. When we started researching, it got bigger and bigger and more interesting and more exciting. And probably the favorite, my favorite book. It's just a wonderful, wonderful story that needed to be told, and that over time the response has been really neat.
Yeah, it was pretty well received.
It was, in the sense that when we first came out, it was like, why are you writing about this? You're not a maritime historian. Maritime historians know all about boilers. They know all about ship structures and superstructures and oil ownership patterns and all this kind of stuff, right? And I'm a sort of a social historian of the North. And we found that this Princess Sophia story is this intricate sort of way of exploring this phenomenal relationship between Alaska, Yukon, between the north, far northwest, and the Pacific Northwest, the British Columbia, Oregon, Washington state, and to sort of give away the sort of the punchline, the most successful and well-established integration of Canada and the United States anywhere in history.
Really?
And lasted for 50 or 60 years.
Oh.
And we used to call this area the Northland. It was referred to everything from the Alaska Panhandle, not British Columbia, but the Alaska Panhandle, all the way up through the Yukon and the rest of Alaska. And the area was an integrated economy, an integrated society. Canadians lived in Alaska, Americans lived in the Yukon. They moved back and forth through the White Pass and Yukon route, took ships along the coast here past Juneau. It's this wonderful sort of integration of Canadians and Americans that is probably one of the best examples in the world of how people from different countries can live in perfect harmony and coexist and mutually support each other over a long period of time.
Do you think that's still the case today?
It has elements of it. So the cruise ship industry, for example, ties us very much together. Tourism generally ties us together. Ecological sort of activism. Whether you're talking about the Porcupine Caribou herd in the northern part of Alaska and into Yukon, the climate change debates and things of that sort, salmon fishing along the northwest coast, we see a lot of those elements. But you know, it's funny to think back that there's way less interaction between the interior of the northwest and the coast here than there was 100 years ago.
That's interesting to think about, because now we have air travel and all sorts of stuff. We even have a flight that goes to Whitehorse from Juneau.
Yeah, you've had them for a long time, mostly tourists coming and sort of, you know, jumping off part of the cruise ship and taking different ships back and forth. But it's we could do better. Could do better. We would all benefit if we did better, to be honest.
So it's been 100 years since the sinking of the Princess Sophia, and it's been about 28 years since your book was first published. What did you not know then that you know now?
Well, interesting. What's been reinforced over the last thank you for reminding me of 28 years. But what's really been fascinating is discovering how little the folks in the interior still grab onto this story. The sinking of the Princess Sophia really remains a coastal story. We gave a talk and presentation down in Victoria, British Columbia. I mean, 300 people showed up. We have little take-up in Fairbanks or in Whitehorse. We're hoping to get lots of people coming to hear talk here in Juneau. Lots of interest along the coast. And so one of the things we tried to do in the book was to make it clear that the sink of the Princess Sophia was a land and water story. Sure, it's got enormous maritime elements and really key parts to that story, but it also is about the people and how they moved across the land, moving north and south and transiency in the region and whatever. And I guess the passion of the people along the coast for this story, it really astonishes me. They really like to remember what happened. I think they honor the past in ways that are very, very different than people inland, because it sort of reminds them of the vulnerabilities of everyday life on the water.
I'm speaking with Kim Coates, the author of The Sinking of the Princess Sophia, Taking the North Down with Her. The main reason you're here today is to let everyone know that you'll be giving a talk tomorrow evening at the APK. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear more about that with Kim Coates. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon.